How will you disrupt yourself? How will you disrupt yourself? How will you disrupt yourself?
Welcome to the Disrupt Yourself podcast, a podcast where we discuss strategies and advice for how to climb the S-curve of learning in your professional and personal life, disrupting who you are to slingshot into who you want to be. I'm your host, Whitney Johnson, and today our guest is Callie Yost, an internationally recognized workplace strategist, futurist, speaker, and author. She is the founder and CEO of the Flex Strategy Group, a company that helps leaders reimagine how, when, and where their people work today and tomorrow. Given that the coronavirus has completely disrupted how we work, there is a lot of reimagining happening right now. So, Callie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Whitney. It is a pleasure to be here today.
You know, I like to ask this question at the very beginning of every episode because I like to have our listeners have a sense of who they're listening to and be able to connect to you a little bit more. So could you tell us very briefly where you grew up and what you wanted to be when you grew up?
I grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is in central Pennsylvania. It is most famously known as the home of the Amish, although I am not Amish personally. And when I was growing up, I wanted to be a journalist, a writer, and I wanted to tell the wonderful stories of other people and went to college wanting to be that. And it was at the college that I actually took an economics class and fell in love with business. So that is where my journey toward telling the stories of business began.
Ah, interesting. So you took an economics class. We're not planning on falling in love with business, but then it was love at first, I don't know, microeconomics equation or something.
Exactly. Exactly. First chart, first Venn diagram. Yes.
So what's interesting, though, is that business has become your life's work, but it's a little bit more specific than that. So how did you get interested in the work that you do today?
Well, it always really has been about reimagining how, when, and where work is done to help businesses and people achieve really the highest levels of performance and well-being. And it began back in the early 90s when I was a junior manager in training at a bank in New York City. And my area specialized in lending to closely held companies. And these are companies where they don't have audited financial statements. So you have to have a very strong relationship with the owner in order to lend money to that business. So the relationship between the banker and the customer is very important. So when I would lose a banker, my business would become very vulnerable. And at the time, I was married and I didn't have any children. But I just, as an aside, was becoming interested in this emerging field of work flexibility. It wasn't even a field. It was literally like this little innovation pocket that was happening in the world in a couple of think tanks. So I was studying this on the side on my own while I was in the process of potentially losing two really very valuable bankers. And one banker was a woman who had gotten remarried and had a child with her second husband and lived in the suburbs and was not going to be able to make the commute every day. And the other one was a father, a young father, who had a child. There was no paternity leave. And so he was sort of not showing up. And I went to my management, again, clueless young manager, and said, hey, why don't we give them some flexibility? Our customers don't care where they are. And I need them to stay with us so that I can maintain that relationship and that business. And needless to say, in the early 90s, before there were laptops or mobile phones or anything, my management looked at me and said, I'm not even actually sure what you're saying. And she just has to leave, I guess. And he just needs to go be put on review. And if he can't get it together, you're going to have to let him go. And it just didn't make any sense to me. So the crowning moment came where I went to the office of the CEO of another bank. We had his business to introduce myself because this woman had left and it was her client. And the CEO basically said that what had happened was a mistake. And what he does with his bankers is he gives them flexibility. And I actually couldn't believe that the senior leader of an organization was speaking about this topic that I had become so obsessed with on the side. And it was one of those moments where sort of the angels kind of sing and time stops. And I walked out of that meeting and I said, I'm doing this. This is what I am doing. And I went to Columbia Business School in 1993, walked the halls of Columbia Business School saying I was going to be a work flexibility strategist. And everything's just sort of played out from there.
Wow. Okay. So you have this experience and you now had found your calling of what you were going to do.
Yes.
All right. So that brings us, we're going to go straight to what's happening today. You've now been a work-life strategist for 25 years. Our world has completely been upended, where remote work is now going to become the commonplace way of conducting business. And no one is quite sure what to do. We had been moving in that direction, but this has completely accelerated it. Tell us what's happening, what you're seeing, and what do we need to know?
So we have been moving very organically in that direction for the past two decades. And since I started doing this work as a work flexibility strategist, I have truly been privileged over those years to work with some of the most visionary leaders, who men and women, who truly understood that the traditional model of work was broken, and to prepare their businesses for success, not only today, but in the future. Flexibility in the way work is done had to be part of their operating DNA, part of their strategic decision-making process. So what they did is they voluntarily threw themselves onto a new S-curve of learning. Okay, so they threw themselves because they had to challenge their beliefs about work and how, when, and where it needed to be done. They put their people on the curve and they put their organizations on the curve for a variety of reasons. And I'm going to get to why this matters today. They understood that they needed to build a culture of high performance flexibility intentionally and deliberately if they wanted to attract and retain the top talent across all generations, if they wanted to engage their workforce and maximize productivity, if they wanted to optimize resources like workspace and technology, they wanted to encourage innovation, and they wanted to service their clients better and smarter the way clients wanted to be serviced. And of course, they wanted to be prepared to respond rapidly to any crisis so they could maintain their operations. And that could have been weather. Now, most of it is weather, cyber attack. And now here we are with this unprecedented crisis of the coronavirus. And so those organizations, and I've been in touch with them, they've been able to almost flip a switch and recalibrate how, when, and where their people are doing their work. On the other hand, you now have all of these organizations who did not do that work and who did not take those intentional, deliberate steps to move their organizations and themselves up that curve, that now find themselves literally overnight thrown on a new curve. And they're trying to now navigate up the different levels in real time. And that can feel very overwhelming and chaotic. But the good news is that I've learned a lot over those 25 years. And there are some simple things that an organization can do in order to not necessarily move to full mastery in this moment, but at least be able to maintain their operation. And most importantly, learn a lot from this moment that they can then take once the crisis passed to do that deliberate, thoughtful work and really position their organization for success in a profoundly important way going forward. So that's what I'm optimistic about. I think ultimately we're going to come to the other side of this, and organizations will be prepared to do that work. And it is very exciting, but we have to help them through this moment. And that's what I'm very committed to do. So now we have to just find a way to help organizations scale that much more broadly.
Right. I was talking to an organization not too long ago, well, in the last week, and they were saying to me, you know, they're working remotely and they need people to be able to talk to each other. And they're all these different platforms. They've got Zoom, they've got Google Hangouts. I think they've got MeetMe. Is it MeetMe? Maybe WebEx, like all these different platforms, and they're not sure how to manage that. So all these really sort of logistical things get very complicated very quickly. Yes. So, Callie, yes. What are some tips for people who are struggling with this and they've been in an office and now all of a sudden it is remote? What are two or three or four things you would suggest that people do to be able to manage through this?
Well, if it's okay with you, I'm going to do five because I think there are sort of five key things.
Oh, please.
Okay. And plus, I love the number five. So let's start with five. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. First tip is, and I can't say this more emphatically, if you have no experience or limited experience working flexibly and or remotely, you really, really need to keep it simple. There is some fantastic advanced level remote workforce strategic advice going around right now, which is, it's awesome, but it's overwhelming. When you are first getting on this curve, S-curve of learning, really try to keep it very simple and straightforward in the beginning. As you begin to move up the curve and master things, by all means, start to emulate and be inspired by leaders who have led distributed workforces for the last 10 years. They have a lot to teach you, but in the meantime, let's just keep it simple and let's just get started. I think that's important so people are not overwhelmed.
Right.
And I'm going to reflect on the story that you just told to be an illustration of that. You know, that's an organization with a lot of platforms. And our research, which we did 2 years ago, we surveyed a national probability sample of full-time U.S. workers. We asked them, what technology do you use most frequently to keep in touch with your colleagues and your supervisors? 14% said they use video conferencing and collaborative platforms. So that's 14% frequently. So that means, let's say that went up to maybe 25% over the last 2 years. You got mm-hmm. a heavy percentage of the workforce not familiar with those technologies right now going into this crisis. So I would say, again, that's great. They're there, but you want to keep it simple. So where do you begin? So this is my second tip. You have to sit down, and this is not hard. You have to sit down and you have to put the jobs that your people do into some broad categories. So for example, jobs that can be done either partially or fully remotely, jobs that can only be done on site. And then you want to begin to break it down by essential and non-essential people who have to be on site to do their work. And there's a reason for this. Once you have those jobs categorized, it makes it easier for you to determine who is going to be able to work partially or completely in a remote capacity. Because not everybody can do this. And I think this is very important. It throws leaders off when they have a component of their workforce that is not able to work remotely because they get caught in the, it's not fair, I can't be consistent. What do I do with these people over here who aren't able to do that? Just start with the people who can go remote and get them set up and get them started. Then what you do for the people who are not able to do their full job remotely or only can do part of their job remotely, that's when you're going to move to being creative with time and space, okay? So think about remote as being place, right? You are leveraging where they're working. Now you're going to move over to think about how you can be creative with when they are working and actually the space within which they're working with each other. And the way you can do that is you can form A and B teams. Okay, so split those people who have to be on site partially or fully and are essential to the business into A and B teams. So you're splitting them in half, and then you can split them and when they come into the workplace, the workspace. So team A works Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the first week. Team B works Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, because some organizations, to keep some productivity that would be lost by doing this, they've added Saturday onto the work week, and then you switch it up the next week. Everybody switches. And the days in between, you are cleaning at the end of that day. And the purpose of this is you want to limit the exposure of everybody to the virus. Now, what other organizations are doing is they're also being creative with time. So instead of having an 8-hour day, they're extending to a 10-hour day so that 30 hours a week of work gets done in those 3 days. Or they're switching hours so that people can come in earlier and miss some of the busier time commuting or leave a little bit later. Also, that's happening and is helpful for parents. So if you have parents who are on your A and B teams and now have kids at home, that can help them coordinate care. So again, just sort of think about the jobs and then assign the different types of flexibility that you can to those jobs. So that's my second tip.
So you're seeing companies do that. You're seeing companies do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's what I'm seeing. Honestly, I'm seeing a lot of panicking. Okay. Like, what? Okay. So I'm trying very hard, again, to keep it simple, just break it down. Okay. And these are some of the solutions that you can begin to employ and experiment with, because this is an experiment. Because, you know, Whitney, when you're on that S curve of learning, it's super awkward in the beginning. Like, you're not going to have nailed it right away, but it can make it easier if you have some structure within which you're trying to do it. Correct?
Yeah. Can I just pause for 2 seconds and tell you how happy I am that you are completely fluent in the S curve of learning? That makes my little heart sing.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a major fan. We've been friends for a very long time. And I told you, when I go into companies and I start a change process, I usually throw the curve up at the beginning and say, I'm just going to put a little context around what we're getting to do, ready to do here. Okay, we're going on a curve and it's going to be a little awkward. And the good news is, remember, the leaders I work with are like, we're going on the curve, man. Let's do it. Let's get, you know,
let's
so there's a voluntary, let's jump on it. Okay, which really is what you need to be successful. What these leaders are experiencing now is they're on it. And I think with a little bit of structure, it's not going to be as overwhelming as it seems right now. And I really, really do believe it's going to lead us to an even better place for their organizations as they go through this.
So again, yeah, absolutely.
So categorize your jobs and leverage the different types of flexibility. Are we ready for point three?
I am ready for tip number three. Bring it on.
All right, Whitney. Tip number three is we have to relax.
Oh, as soon as you said that.
Okay,
I'm relaxing.
Well, we do. We just have to relax. We have to relax. Specifically, not only do we have to relax and just support each other, but we need to relax the work from home best practices that are valid and very relevant in normal times. These are not normal times. So we need to relax some of those best practices, which again are being presented very broadly, and they are not wrong. You really should try to have a separate space with a door and walls. You really should try to minimize distractions. But what's going on right now, where people are finding themselves overnight having to work remotely, that's unrealistic. And what you want to do is you want people to feel they can be accessible and responsive to you without worrying that their workspace has to be completely perfect, as they are hearing all remote workspaces need to be. We need to be a little more forgiving of a child in the room. We need to be more forgiving of a dog barking. We need to be more forgiving of a roommate who is also trying to remote work right next to you while you're on a conference call. We need to be more forgiving if I am working at my dining room table, or the only place I can work is in my bedroom because that's the only door. Is that optimal? No. And once this is over, it is important to go back and say, okay, let's regroup and let's try to establish and get back to some of these best practices. But right now, what really matters is people feel that they can respond and be accessible and not worry about the workspace being absolutely correct before they're able to do that.
It's so funny that you say that. So this morning I was doing a LinkedIn Live and I was working, and one of the people said in the comments, like, what's behind the shutter? So I've got this like shutter right behind me.
I know, I watched it this morning. I love your LinkedIn Live. What is behind the shutter?
My bed is behind this shutter because I don't have an office yet. I need a desk for my office. And so I am working in my bedroom and I was just like laughing so hard. So, hey, everybody, poster girl for remote work that is not ideal. And I do love that. I was just doing a Zoom call with someone, one of my coaching clients this morning, and his cute little daughter walks in. She's probably like five or six, and she has on a Hulk costume and she's like waving. You know what I love about this is you're right. It will go back to normal, but we will also in the process normalize the work-life fit that you've been advocating for the last 25 years, that it's okay that, a child walks in the room. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. And as I was saying earlier today, we are watching the real-time destruction of the artificial boundary between work and life. It's now gone. We now know there's really no boundary between the two. And again, we're done with this and the other side, we'll figure out what that looks like now. But we have to really be forgiving.
I think this is one of those upshots, though. I mean, this is like when you've got a massive disruption, there are all sorts of things that will not work and will end. But I think this is one of those positive things that is going to happen. And
I agree with you.
I think it's lovely. Okay. What's your next tip?
I agree with you. All right. We're on to number four. And this goes back to the story you told at the beginning. Okay. I really feel strongly about this. You need to stick with the technology that everybody already knows and start there. Okay. So if you normally communicate mostly with email, text, mobile phone calls, with conference calls, stick with that up front and just get settled using that. And if you have video conferencing capability, and most people have some comfort with that, I would start using that as well. But don't worry if you're not facilitating a video conference call to the most masterful level that you can do. There are a lot of best practices around that, but it's enough right now to get everybody on the VPN, okay? Mm-hmm. You get them on the VPN, just get them logged on, get everybody settled with an initial meeting or two. Then you can talk about maybe adding something else in. But I'm getting a little nervous that I'm hearing people all of a sudden logging onto, messaging platforms. And that's adding a level of complexity right now that isn't necessary. So just start with the technology that you have that you know your system can support. And that's when you want to start to establish a communication protocol using that technology. So what I mean by that is, you're going to prioritize, like that group was struggling with that you were talking to. Which ones are we prioritizing? How are we going to be talking to each other? What do we use first? Put that in some kind of a priority order. And then what you want to do is start using it. So if you're not used to having a regular check-in with your people every day, you might want to start with saying, hey, we're going to have an all hands check-in at the beginning of the day for 15 minutes to just check in on priorities. I'm going to get some updates on where you are. And then let's check in with each other throughout the day this way and start with that. And then check in at the end of the week and say, how'd that go? Like, what should we be doing? Could we be doing something differently? What would be more helpful? And that's when you're going to start to think to really be specific about what are our priorities? What are we trying to do? And what this is going to feel like initially is micromanaging. Because in most organizations where there is no flexibility, this is not really happening. And I know this for the following reason. When I go into a workplace, this is literally this is the question I get from almost every manager. How do I know people are working if I can't see them? My answer is always the same. So that's easy, actually. How do you know they're working now? It should be no different. And I get a blank stare 9 times out of 10. We are not doing a very good job in most workplaces today being clear about productivity. What do we value? What matters? What's important? And that's one of the great magics of deliberately implementing flexibility in your culture is all of a sudden you start answering that question. And productivity measures become clear. It's true. It's really, it is fascinating.
So what you're saying, can I just clarify? So what you're saying is that when you are driven to do remote work, that paradigm of I see someone at their computer, therefore they're working, you can't You can't use that as a measure or a metric anymore. And so now you're like, well, now I've got to measure it. And so people start to look at actual productivity measures of what was their output? Yeah. What did they get done?
Yep.
I'm thinking, that's so interesting. I have another question for you.
Yeah.
You talked about like, how are they communicating? So if you've got a company that historically is focused on text and email, would you do the check-in via text and email? Or are there platforms that you're recommending that people use, whether it's Google Hangouts or Zoom? Or what are you seeing for a company that maybe hasn't had to use video conferencing, sort of more of a startup type of company? Anything that you're recommending?
Well, I think that could be a phone call, could be a conference call, you know, just logging into a conference
to start.
Number and just, to start. But I do think, you know, this is why I sort of say with some guarded enthusiasm, if you can dive into a video conferencing situation, try that. A couple things that come up. One, people's cameras on their computers are wonky. Okay. So that could be like a whole 3-hour thing, just getting everybody's video camera going. And that's fine. The other thing is you may have some people who are super duper uncomfortable showing their house, like where they live and what their background looks like. And say, so this is something that we really are not, we haven't thought about, right?
That's interesting.
When you video conference in somebody into your house, you are letting them into your life in a way that they are not normally let into. And some people could be very hesitant about that. So this is a very chaotic time, right? People are overwhelmed already. People are feeling very insecure. And so, you want to just kind of gauge that. And the other part is people don't know what to wear. They're like, what do I wear? How do I dress? You know what? These are the things you have to clarify up front, which is do not worry about distractions. Do not worry about what you're wearing. Do not worry about the background. It's all fine. It's just important that you're part of this conversation and that we're trying this together. Okay, this is a great story. Bob Sutton, you know, Work Matters.
Yeah.
Bob Sutton. Okay, so he put out on Twitter, he's a Stanford professor, and he put up on Twitter that the other day he just facilitated a video classroom with his students, and many of them were in bed. Okay, like they were in bed, and they thought it was great. So, you know, hey, that's the next generation that's coming into the workplace right now, having all gone to school virtually. They're going to be in bed. So this is really probably a near-term problem that we have, people being afraid to show their life. But yeah, so that's what I would say. Start with just a conference call if people are just uncomfortable, because you just want to be communicating at this point.
So, interesting. That considerations I would never have considered. Okay.
Number five is, and this is the final one, but I am going to end, with one caveat that goes back to the S curve of learning. But my number five, before I do that, is, again, you want to just be really very rigorous about what you're prioritizing. So pick one or two priorities that are really, really important right now. You cannot do all of your pre-coronavirus crisis priorities. You want to really hone in on the ones that matter. So maybe it is, we have really got to be connected to our customers and see what they need and make sure they know we are here and we are communicating with them. How do we do that? We really need to make sure that we are keeping ourselves financially afloat. So how do we do that? Like, just make those things, those priorities up front and keep checking in with them. And you're always going to be reprioritizing as you go along week after week. With that, you want to optimize the white space. Okay. This is so, so important. Okay. So imagine you have had to cancel or reschedule, you know, half of what you had coming up for the next 4 weeks. That leaves a lot of white space, right, on everybody's calendars. Fill it with all those back burner projects that never, ever get done, right? Like, update all those manuals that never get updated. Start the newsletter you keep meaning to start. Do research on potential customers or a new product brainstorming. Like, all the things that just don't get done while you are in the thick of the day-to-day of work. really think about how to fill that time so that, again, when this crisis is over and we are on the other side of it, you have all this good stuff that you've done that now even sets you up for more success. So that's my tip number five. And then I'm going to wrap it all up by saying, Whitney, you were thrown on this S-curve of learning involuntarily and overnight, and it is overwhelming. But if you follow these basic steps, you can begin to climb up the curve. And week after week, you can maybe do a little bit more. But each week, you need to be checking in and you need to be learning in real time what people are experiencing. And take that data, keep that data. So when you are done and we've moved through this and you have some brain space and some bandwidth to reflect, you are going to use that information, that data, and that experience to then go on the new PERV, which is the deliberate, intentional reimagining of the way how, when, and where work is going to be done going forward, based upon what you have learned and in this crisis period. And you will ultimately set your organization up for success in the future. For all of those reasons I shared with you, that the leaders I have worked with over the years, what they knew, and it has all played out. Okay, so guess at the end of the pilot period of our change process, so the way we do change is we come in, we train, and then we facilitate a six-week all-skate pilot period with this new way of working. We do a pre and a post. At the end, inevitably, we ask, how did this pilot affect productivity? What we want to see is that nothing bad happened, because that's always the big fear. And inevitably, nobody says anything bad happened. But you have a very sizable percentage of supervisors and employees saying in 6 weeks, productivity went up. Why is that? Why? Because there's an element of intentionality and engagement that was not there before. And that is nothing but good. Oh. And again, you are prepared then for the next time this happens. Then you're able to flip the switch and remain operational and keep the operating continuity together and not have to find yourself in this place again. And that's what I hope for all leaders and organizations that go through this. I really do.
So Callie, where can people find you? We're going to include it in the show notes, but is there an article, like if people want to learn more about this, where can they find you?
So our site is flexstrategygroup.com. I am very active on Twitter and on LinkedIn. And in fact, what I did just today is I went through my last three articles where I wrote out step by step from planning to implementation, and now also what parents can do and leaders can do to partner with parents to take care of the 32 million children that are now in people's homes while they work. I took all the steps that I put in those three articles and I broke them out, and I put each one 15 steps, one after the other on Twitter, and 15 steps, one after the other on LinkedIn. So you literally can just scroll through my Twitter feed at Callie Yost, and you could go to my LinkedIn page, just scroll through my page, and you will see each one of those 15 steps. You could just follow them, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and hopefully it will help you get started and not be so overwhelmed.
Fantastic. And then if you can send us those articles, we'll include them in the show notes as well. So you can either go to her Twitter at Callie Yost or her LinkedIn and look at them, or you can come to the show notes and see the articles all in one place.
And my newsletter. Oh. You can sign up for my newsletter, because we're sending out even more newsletters now, just really like topical, real-time information and advice for people. So you can sign up for that at my site as well.
Perfect. Okay, so we'll include that in the show notes as well. So any final thoughts for us as we wrap up?
This is a really scary time. It is overwhelming, and nobody would want this. Nobody would wish for this to be the reason that your organization is stepping back and having to reimagine the way your people work. But I know this for a fact, that we can all just pull together and be patient and be willing to try and experiment in real time, you will come out of this on the other side smarter and even more prepared for success going forward. So again, I look forward to partnering with everybody in that process, because I do believe it's going to happen.
Callie Yost, thank you for being with us in this very timely conversation, and thank you for helping us reimagine work in a really positive way.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Whitney, and it's just a joy to be on your show with you. I'm a fan.
Aw. Right back at you. Thanks again, Callie. Our free will pushes against constraints. We think they're a check on our freedom, but we often do our most creative thinking within the bounds of constraints. Here in the United States, I'm seeing posts online sharing how businesses are pivoting, how they're changing their hours so the elderly can come in first to grocery stores, and taping lines on the floor to keep checkers and shoppers safely distanced from one another, and a whole host of creative solutions to this situation we find ourselves in around the world. When things feel out of control, sometimes all we can do is lean into those constraints, to take one simple step at a time. When it comes to figuring out how to help our workforce move to remote work, I love Callie's approach. Yes, it would have been better to think of this earlier, and yes, there are ideal things to do when it comes to working at home, but the most important thing you can do right now as a leader is to just start with what you have, where you are, with what you know, and build on that. Figure out who can work remotely and get them set up so they can get started. If people need to be in a specific physical location to work, be creative about how and when that happens. Use the tools you have to deliberately build patterns of success and then build on that. Then, when we're able to again work in the same physical location, we'll be able to analyze what worked, keep what did, and discard what didn't. For more information on how to work through working remotely with your team, be sure to follow Callie online, and we've linked to some of her articles in the show notes. If you visit whitneyjohnson.com/podcast, you'll find her episode. And for our daily conversations around disruption and how to manage during this time, I'm on LinkedIn Live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern, and I'd love to see you there. Thank you again to Callie Yost for being our guest. Thank you to sound engineer Melissa Ruddy, manager, editor Macy Robison, content contributors Emily Davis and Nancy Wilson, and art director Brandon Jameson. I'm Whitney Johnson, and this is Disrupt Yourself.